The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. And I'm
the king of the podcast world. And you're my podcast queen
or king. That's right, the remedy for boredom has arrived, and let's go for a ride with Vicky Guerrero, the wife of the late, great Eddie Guerrero, aunt to Chavo Guerrero Jr., and most importantly, one of the best heat-generating heel characters in WWE history. Man, I'll tell you what, Vicky gets so much heat. When she picked up the microphone and started talking, you couldn't even hear her. And we're going to get into all of that, especially since she came into pro wrestling a little later in life and sort of by accident, by necessity, actually. She just retired last year. She's back in school working on a degree. She's doing great. And that's actually why it took us almost a year to get this interview done, her school schedule. But we finally made it happen in Houston, where she's living now. We talked a lot about Eddie, their early days together, his days in the ring, and his final days before he passed. Vicky was also very close to Nancy and Chris Benoit, has some thoughts about what happened with them, the horrible tragedy with Chris Benoit and Nancy and their family. We'll get Vicky on the mic here. She's got a lot of stuff to say, and like I said, she's such a sweet, sweet person. Really glad we're able to hook up, and I'm really glad you're here with me. How the hell are you, Jerichoholics? I appreciate you listening to this show two times a week, and I appreciate the great sponsors of Talk is Jericho who make this happen so you can listen to it two times a week for free. And of course, big thanks to all of you for supporting my great sponsors and this podcast. I know you got hundreds and thousands of podcasts to schwaz from, and I appreciate your schwaz and mine. And you know, the easiest way to help out TIJ is to use my Amazon links wherever you do your online shopping. All right, you just go to podcastone.com, you click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page. I know people hate when I say that, so I'm going to say it again. Page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to the show to help us cover production costs all across the globe. Amazon USA, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada. Hey, I got links for all of those. You get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon. You get the Cheech and Chong movies, Up in Smoke, one of my favorites. Have you heard the Cheech Marin interview on Talk is Jericho from a few weeks ago? It is amazing. It's a must hear, a must listen. How about the Gene Simmons? You buy the Gene Simmons Kiss solo record. You can buy his other solo record, Asshole. I don't know if it was a great seller or not, but it's out there. Gene, tremendous on Talk is Jericho, one of my favorite guests. Don't forget about Paul Stanley. You can get the Paul Stanley Face the Music, a life exposed book. Kiss going on tour very soon in South America. And, of course, Fozzy will be joining them on the Kiss Cruise. You can get Shawn Michaels' book, Wrestling for My Life, The Legend, Reality, The Faith of a WWE Superstar. So many books to get. Fozzy's latest record, Do You Want to Start a War, is on Amazon. Also, how about my new DVD, The Road is Jericho? It's just sweeping the nation, rare matches and behind-the-scenes stories. And behind-the-scenes stories are talking about all those things as well. My third book, the latest book, the third New York Times bestseller, the best in the world at what I have no idea. Anything you want, buy whatever you want. But listen, the most important thing is when you use those Amazon links, it's not going to cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. So if you happen to do some online shopping, I want you to do it through Amazon and help out the show and process. You go to podcastone.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the pagey wagey. Then you hit the Talk is Jericho button. And you bookmark those so you can get all those links in one easy click. And listen, I've said it a couple times already. I'll say it again. April 14th, I am co-hosting the 10th Annual Podcast Awards in Las Vegas. You need to come join me. And if you want to come join me, do it through Vegas.com and use my promo code Jericho. If you want to come and see what happens, all you guys who nominated Talk is Jericho for an award, and maybe you've been voting for Talk is Jericho to win an award, maybe I'll go home a double winner. Maybe I'll go home as the host and the podcast award winner. Each one is so cookie. I'll be co-hosting with Emily Morris. Her podcast is called Sex with Emily. It's also up for an award. Going to be a good time tonight. Going to be a good time tonight. Rock and roll music make you feel all right. Yeah, I'm hosting them podcast awards. So go to Vegas.com and check it out. Vicky Guerrero coming up. It took us a year to make this happen because she's been so crazy working in the WWE. And then she retired, going back to school. She had a lot of homework. She was working. She's a very, very busy lady. We were able to work out a date down in Houston at a live event, and you're going to hear that amazing conversation coming up very, very shortly. But talking about amazing conversations, it was the very first episode of Live with Chris Jericho. Live with Chris Jericho. The first episode of Live with Chris Jericho on the WWE Network aired this past Monday with my guest John Cena, and it was awesome. You know, it's funny. I want to clear up a couple things about this. I know that before... A couple months ago, Steve Austin did a couple shows on the network and then ran that audio on his podcast after. That's not what I'm doing. This is an exclusive show specifically for the WWE Network. That's the way I wanted it. Talk is Jericho is its own brand, its own entity, and Live with Chris Jericho is also its own brand and its own entity. No reason to cross the streams. If you're talking Ghostbusters terms, which my old buddy Zack Ryder would understand. My point is, why dilute it? Why have a show that's going to be on the network and some people will watch it and other people go, I'll just wait to hear it when it comes on Talk is Jericho, and vice versa. Well, why should I get the network? You know, why should I listen to Talk is Jericho? I already saw it on the network. You know what I'm saying? I want to keep it two separate things, and that's what we're going to do. So if you want to see or hear the John Cena interview live with Chris Jericho, you have to get it on the network exclusively. But it's funny because I know Steve set the tone by asking the hard questions. And I mean, yeah, there were some hard questions, but it was just mostly conversations and that sort of thing. And I did the same with Cena. I mean, everybody here who listens to Talk is Jericho knows how I conduct my interviews. I'm about people having a good time. I want people to walk away going, that was my favorite interview I've ever done. I know what it's like to get asked the same questions. I know what it's like when people try and, you know, get some controversial answers and that sort of thing. And I think the conversation was amazing. And most of you do as well. A lot of great feedback from the conversation, and people are saying it sounded like two old friends having a talk with each other, and that's what it was. I mean, I've known Cena for, you know, 13 years now, and as you heard on that show, his first pay-per-view match was against me, you know, and I actually went to bat for him with Vince McMahon to let me put him over because I thought he had something special. And we talked about a lot of stuff. We talked about how he was kind of buried when he first came in and his backwards promo that he used to do. And I asked him if he did steroids and performance-enhancing drugs. I asked him if he was going to turn heel. I asked him if he thought he was being stagnant. I asked him about the feud he had with The Rock and when he called him out for when Rock had his promo written on his arm. And yet still people are bitching and complaining. You didn't ask the hard questions. You know, you didn't ask these are softball questions. And I'm like, what did you want me to ask him? You know, I mean, what am I supposed to say? What is your thoughts on the current political system in the United States? Or what are your thoughts on religion? You know, I mean, what did you want? You know, why did you bury Nexus? I mean, I could have asked that, but the conversation never went that way. I run my shows like a conversation, and this is not Oprah. I'm not out to get anybody and to, you know, put people in a tough position. But what kind of hard questions was I supposed to ask? You know what I mean? And I think we had a conversation that delved in some pretty, you know, kind of pristine areas. Some areas that you don't usually talk about. I mean, I know when I got asked if I'd ever done steroids on and off the record, it was like, well, that's kind of a personal question. It does kind of put you on the offensive a bit. But whatever. It's like, I know how I like to run my shows, and I think you guys like to listen to them because we've done over 70 million downloads on Talk is Jericho. And that's why this brand name to me, Talk is Jericho, is very sacred, and I want to keep it exclusively to Talk is Jericho. But why not create another brand? You know how I am. I'm all about creating a whole media empire, so let's put a show on the WWE Network as well. And plus, I'm still going to be doing interviews for Talk is Jericho backstage in the WWE locker room and getting the type of answers and the type of conversations and the fun. I mean, I'm all about fun, as you guys know. And if you don't like it and you want the hard-hitting questions, then don't listen to the show. I mean, it's quite simple. It's funny how there's been this big Twitter war over the last little bit from a lot of people kind of revolting against Chris Jericho because I said I like Roman Reigns. And I said that don't act up at the Hall of Fame ceremony and, all this sort of stuff. And listen, I just do my thing. I've been the same person that I've been for the last 20 years. I've worked for the WWE since 99. And you're talking about a corporate shill. Hey, listen, man, who, with all the suspensions that I've had and fines that I've gotten for doing things wrong, getting yelled at, almost getting fired, don't tell me that I'm a corporate shill. All right. You don't know what a corporate shill is, when you've been suspended for 30 days for kicking a flag in Brazil and refuse to take a phone call from your boss. That's not a corporate shill. I turned down a call from the WWE office to go in the Royal Rumble this year. If I was a corporate shill, that would mean I'd be like, thank you, sir. May I have another? I do my thing. If you like it, welcome. Yeah, you are a fan and a friend and part of the family forever. If you don't like it, thanks for all the time that you listened. Thanks for all the time you are on board with me, and have a great life, and I hope to see you again someday. That's the best I can do. I'm not going to change who I am. And I don't understand why people think that somehow that podcasts need to be some kind of a hard-hitting, revealing the layers of the soul. To me, I treat a podcast like the Tonight Show, man. You see people on there, you exchange some funny stories, you have a few laughs, you have a good time, you move on. That's what a podcast is to me. And I think some people have kind of misconstrued the meaning of what a podcast is, where you're supposed to ask somebody, how big their penis is, or if they've ever driven through a stop sign, or if they've ever, eaten a couple grapes before they got to the checkout line in the grocery store. Grape stealer, you're a grape stealer. These are the hard-hitting questions. Like I said, man, I do the best I can all the time, and I don't even know why there's any issue. I mean, I really enjoyed the conversation with John because he's my friend, and we had fun talking about a lot of different stuff, and it was exactly what I hoped for it could be, hoped it to be, and more. And I'm excited. And guess what? For all those you guys that enjoyed the show, there will be more. Live with Chris Jericho is going to be a thing now. Is this a thing? Is this a thing? Yes, it's a thing. And for those of you that didn't like it, you're probably not listening anyways. But bad news: there's going to be more shows. So get used to my interview style. And I guess I wonder if Jimmy Fallon ever got in trouble for not asking the hard-hitting questions, or Conan O'Brien, are those type of guys, because that's the cloth that I've been cut from. I'll tell you this right now. Johnny Carson is my hero, not Geraldo Rivera, not Oprah. So you're going to get a lot more of a Johnny Carson type element to my show. That's why I do have a lot of the bits, the bits that I have on Egypt and that sort of thing. I mean, that's because that comes right from Johnny Carson. He would always have these characters that came on the show, and I have them on my show as well. So anyways, long story short, that was almost a rant there. I appreciate you guys checking out Live with Chris Jericho. And good news, it's now a thing. It's a new show on the WWE Network once a month, exclusively on the WWE Network. And more good news is that Talk is Jericho is exclusive to PodcastOne.com twice a week, every week. So there's going to be so many more guests coming up. I'm really excited about today's guest, Vicky Guerrero. She's going to be killer.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
is Jericho.
So I'm really excited because I finally were able to work out this this time to hang out with Vicky Guerrero, one of my oldest friends. I've known you for so long.
Years and years.
Maybe 20 years or something like that.
You're old like I am.
I might have first met you. Did you used to stay in the Plaza Madrid in Mexico City?
Yeah, well, it was actually a Hotel San Diego.
Hotel San Diego, okay.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, when Eddie was training down there, we had a one-bedroom apartment with a floor full of wrestlers, and Shaw was like 9 months old.
Wow.
And we stayed in the hotel while he traveled, and it was quite a life experience. That's when I knew I loved Eddie to do that.
Yeah, because you moved from El Paso to Mexico City. Okay, because when I first started going to Mexico City, when I met Eddie, he was already living in the Plaza Madrid. So he'd been kind of bumped up at that point.
Yes, yeah.
But the Hotel San Diego was not...
No, it was crappy. But the cooks were good to us.
I mean, oh, yeah?
Yeah, we got to learn to have our own food that we liked. And I learned Spanish there.
So you never knew how to speak Spanish?
I did, but it was the Spanglish, you know.
Cholo or whatever. Yeah. Chola.
Yo voy a la store. I'll be back ahorita.
Yeah, right, right, right. That's how Chavito speaks it, too.
Yes.
He always claims he can speak Spanish, and he'd be like, there's a ghost in here. He's like, I'll explain it. Hey, una pinche ghost. You just said the same thing, but you put pincha in front of it.
Yeah.
You can't speak Spanish.
Yeah. And me and Chavito got along so well because we could, oh, yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
We have a whole conversation in our own little code language.
but we're here in Houston, and this is where you are living here because you are one of the few that actually got out of the wrestling business on your own terms, which doesn't happen too often, as you know. And, it's funny because this morning I was in the airport. We had an early flight, and you texted me to find out if we're all good for this time frame. Like, I realized it was like 5 or 6 in the morning. I'm like, "What are you doing up?"
I felt so bad because I was like, "Oh shoot!"
I was already at the airport, but you were saying that you have homework, and your schedule is really crazy because we've tried to get this together a few times, but
yeah, it's been a while.
It's
almost a year.
Almost a year of trying this, and yeah. it's your school is that. Busy?
It's pretty intense. I go online, but my schedule is 3 classes. So, you know, you put that about 12 hours a week.
Right.
And so usually weekends are my homework time.
Okay.
You know? So like this morning when I called you, I was getting ready for church.
Mm-hmm.
And after church, I went home and did some homework and uh-huh. then came here. And then after I talked to you, I would go back to homework again.
So what are you taking?
I'm getting my associate's in medical administration.
Okay.
And I've been doing that since the past 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a plan, you know, about 3 years ago that I was ready to leave, you know, even though I was going to miss inside the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't be in here forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I love the business and it was very good to me and it fed my family. And, you know, but there's a point where you want to do more in life. You know, I want to be challenged. I wasn't challenged anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was coming to work to do homework and I thought, gosh, this is really time for me to go. Because, you know, everyone has their cycle. Their storylines come and go and you're hot for 6 months. And then, you know, it goes to where you just kind of sit around and wait for your next chance to mm-hmm. perform. And I've done everything on the show that I could ever think of.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, you were so versatile. Because, you came into it pretty late in your life as far as actually being an on-air performer
very
here in
late,
the company,
Chris.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, I was... The first time I came to the show, well, not first time to the show, but to work was with Eddie, you mm-hmm. know, during the Rey Mysterio storyline.
Yeah, just to be like the concerned wife sort of thing.
And it was just backstage when Eddie yelled at me in the car and I drove away with the kids, you know, and the kids could cry on cue. And that's when we were like, what if we started here?
They were working it already.
Yeah, and it was so funny, you know, because, I mean, and we thought that was it. But then when Vince started saying, hey, you know, let's bring, you know, raise, you know, family and the girls and Vicky out and let's put them on the ring. And, you know, and I was just like, oh, my gosh, what have we started here?
Yeah.
But it was fun. I mean, you know, the girls have always been performing, like, for cheerleading mm-hmm. teams and, you know, it's like your kids, you know, always in activities.
Sure, doing
so
stuff, yeah.
I think because they saw me and Eddie out there, they were fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they were good. I mean, I think they kind of inspired me, you know, when I watched them, like, okay, let's go do this.
Did you ever do any kind of performing or acting?
I did. Okay. I was a cheerleader in high school and college, and mm-hmm. I was in band, and I danced for a baseball team, you know, in El Paso.
Yeah.
Los Diablos.
So of
I was used to crowds, but not to where there's TV, you know, and a magnitude this big, you know, mm-hmm. for WWE. And then for Eddie to do things right so he wouldn't yell at me, you know, because he's such a perfectionist. So
how did you meet Eddie? You're talking about being a cheerleader and everything.
Well, actually, I met Eddie on a blind date. My best friend knew his best friend. And she was like, hey, you know, my friend has this guy that, you know, we can, you know, say we all hit it off. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, let's go to a nightclub.
Yeah.
If I don't like him, I can go dance with someone else.
Right.
And I met Eddie, and it was like we hit it off. And I even broke curfew that night just to spend more time with him. And we met in El Paso. And the funny story is my grandfather used to own a leather store.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to make Eddie's dad's robes and boots.
No kidding.
And me and Eddie used to play in the playpen when we were 1 and 2 years old.
Really?
Yes. So when my family found out that I was dating Eddie, they're like, oh, we know the Guerreros. And they used to come to my grandfather's leather shop and get all the wrestlers, you know, jackets and boots and whatever my grandfather made for them.
It was like totally meant to be a faithful thing.
Yes.
Now, did you know of the Guerrero family?
Nothing of it.
Really?
No, I mean, I hated wrestling because my brothers loved it. And when I started dating Eddie, my brothers thought he was the coolest boyfriend I ever had. Like, no, let him stay. And they started watching wrestling, and eventually I started watching it and getting into it. You know, but I wanted to meet Eddie to meet the Von Erichs. That was like my crush. So it was a joke between me and Eddie. You know, he's like, you want them or you want me? And I'm like, I'll take you.
How old were you guys?
I was 18.
So Eddie was...
He's same.
Same age. Yeah. So he must have just been starting out.
Yeah, he was a year... He was like a few months older than me, but he was working in Juarez,
yeah.
At the time. Yeah.
Because his father was still alive at that point in time, right?
And he was still promoting in Juarez in the Coliseum.
Okay.
So it was really, you know, I just walked into, you know, the family business being strong in, mm-hmm. you know, El Paso, but I never had interest in going to wrestling shows or, you know, I was the dancer and the...
Right.
You know, cheerleader and...
So when you guys started to date and Eddie's just starting to wrestle, what was his first kind of, I guess, break? Would that be when he went to Mexico City?
Yeah, he wanted, when he was in Juarez, there was opportunities to go to AAA,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to go spend time with them. And he would go back and forth. And then me and Eddie, Eddie got me pregnant. And mm-hmm. so we got married really quick by the orders of his dad.
Really?
Yeah. His dad was still alive whenever uh-huh. When I got pregnant. And that was in January, we found out, of 1990.
Yeah, because he passed away like in 1990 later on, right?
Yes. His dad passed away a week before our wedding.
That's right. Okay.
And we were almost going to have our ceremony in the hospital so his dad could be a part of it. And we were going to do it that Friday, and his dad passed away on Thursday.
But his dad gave the orders, even as an older guy, that you are going to get married?
Well, son, what are you going to do? Uh-huh. And, you know, they had this dinner with my parents and his mom and dad. And what are you going to do, son? He goes, well, I'll marry her, dad. And he goes, that's good word, son. His dad was so wonderful.
And really?
He was a great guy. And he sided with me, so it was even better.
tell us, because Gory Guerrero, obviously a very legendary guy, and there's not a lot of people... That can say that they knew him, and you knew him as, like you said, as the daughter-in-law. So sweet guy, nice guy, stern, mean,
beautiful
really?
Heart.
Yeah,
yeah. They said he was meaner when he was younger,
mm-hmm.
but I, you know, he was already sick, you know, and he wasn't doing very well. So I got probably a good year probably like a good 4 months to really get to know him because he was home a lot,
mm-hmm.
and it was a lot of fun. I mean, he was funny and he loved to watch shows and. Of course, you know, I experienced him going to the hospital and mm-hmm. helping his mom out. And his mom was just an angel
to me. She's the best, Linda.
She taught me so much about how to be a good wife for a wrestler.
Really?
You know, and how to tell me the good, the bad.
Interesting.
Yeah, because we lived with her, you know, when we got married because we were broke. We were so broke. But it was good, though. I mean, she helped me with Shawl, you know, when she was a baby. And she taught me how to cook. She taught me how to speak Spanish. She helped me buy my wedding dress in Juarez. She bargained with the ladies over there. She was a fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love what you said about how she gave you advice on how to be married to a wrestler. Because it's a different set of rules as far as being gone and being apart all the time and that sort of thing, you know?
Well, yeah, because, you know, I mean, a normal couple dates and they have the same job in the same city and, you know, they see each other every day. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, when Eddie would travel, it'd be 2-3 weeks, mm-hmm. you know, that he'd be gone. And it kind of started affecting me. And she's like, we need to talk if you guys are going to be serious, you know. And she sat down, said, if you're going to do this, you have to do it all the way. You have to accept him for everything that's going to come with this business. Mm-hmm. There's going to be the injuries. There's going to be, you know, him being gone for months, you know, and you never know when he's going to be done with that tour, you know, for him to come home. And you're going to be the one who takes care of the kids and to be the one who takes them here and there and do the carpool. And you're the single parent.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. I was like, it can't be that bad. You know, like, this is, you know, because I was working. Eddie was in WADA, so he was, you know, I think WADA shows were like Thursdays and Sundays. Mm-hmm. So he worked. You know,
Mars is just across the border from El Paso.
From his house, it was 10 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
So it was perfect, yeah. You know. So when he started traveling, it all started making sense of what she would tell me. Mm-hmm. And she is a wise woman. I mean, she has so much knowledge and strong woman, mm-hmm. you know, to put up with all her sons.
Well, yeah, that's a crazy family, the Guerreros.
That's not even the right word.
Is there a bigger word for crazy? Super nuts. But yeah, and you know, I know it too. I mean, have had experiences with all of them, and they're an interesting group of guys. But like you said, when you're dealing with a family that's been in the business their whole life, you know, Gori was there since 1930, and here we are in 2014. You know, you just got out. I know Vishal is not going to be doing it. So, you know, I don't know if Mondo, which Chavito still works.
Yeah,
you know,
Chavito does the Lucha Underground right
yes,
now.
Yes, and maybe his sons will get into it. I don't know. But, you know, will the family tradition continue along?
I hope so, because his sons have the Guerrero name. You
yeah.
know, so that would be kind of nice. You know, I have girls, so
yeah.
of course, you know, Shaw's going to get married and her name will change. And,
right.
You know, and I'm not coming back. So, but I mean, I'll always be a part of the family.
Let me ask you a question. I was going to ask this before when you said you're not coming back. How was it for you? Because you left maybe a year ago?
I left June.
Okay.
So
when you're finally gone... And now, I mean, I know times when I've been gone, it's like you actually become a real person again.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, hey, we're having a barbecue on, you know, Monday or Sunday. Like, no one's inviting me. Well, we didn't think you were ever available. Well, usually you're not. But now you actually can be a part of society again.
Yeah, it was an adjustment, mm-hmm. you know, because you're used to, you know, traveling the house shows. You know, you leave on a Friday, come back on Wednesday
morning.
Did you
work a lot of the house shows?
I did.
Wow.
I did, you know, and so you come home, you know, Thursday, Friday, leave all and do it all over again. So when I came home, it took a little bit of adjustment to be still
mm-hmm.
and throw my suitcase away.
Yeah.
You know,
actually
like,
unpack it for once.
Yeah, and not have it sitting on my bedroom floor, you know, reminding me that there's another,
yeah,
you know, trip coming up. Yeah, or checking for your flight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really enjoying my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blessed, you know, because this job was so good to me. And it showed me confidence. And it showed me that I could do something out of my element that I never thought I could do.
Yeah.
And so, and then now, you know, going to school and finding a job, you know, someone actually hired me. And I passed all their exams. And I went through 4 interviews.
And they're hiring you because you're qualified for the job, not because you're a TV
yeah.
star, Vicky
And they knew
Guerrero.
Nothing about me before.
Yeah.
You know, they knew nothing that I was a wrestler. Of course, it's on my resume, but they didn't realize the extent of how popular I was.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought it was just, you know, I was just part of an athletic team. You know, so, but now they know who I am. And I find out a lot of the families are, you know, fans and stuff. But to have this job, I'm so happy. You mm. know, I work 9 to 5. Sometimes 8 to 4. I have weekends off. I'm in my bed every night.
You have holidays, yeah.
Yeah, I get paid time off. I mean, when I think I had July 4th off and it was like a 3-day weekend, I'm like, we have Friday off? I mean, I really,
what?
It took time to adjust, you know, and then to be able to have a, you know, a social life. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the girl's like, hey, you want to go, you know, have dinner? I'm like, yeah, I can have dinner.
Yeah, wow.
Like, I am home on a Saturday. This is kind of cool.
Was it tough with the girls? I mean, you're a single parent for real, and being on the road, and your girls were younger at the time, probably in high school or junior high?
Yeah, both. Yeah, Sean was in junior high, and Shaw's in high school. It sucked.
Yeah.
And it was hard. You get those anger issues, you know, like you're I was angry that Eddie was gone.
Yeah.
Because I could have been home, you right. know, and I things could have been the way they were.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to thank God because I had good nannies that took care of my girls.
So that's what you did, had nannies.
I did. I had a really good nanny. Well, I went through a few, but the last one I had lasted about 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she was our family. And,
okay.
you know, and it takes that support for me to be able to have confidence to go to Europe or to
right.
go across
for
the world.
Like 2 weeks or whatever
yeah.
it is. Yeah.
And leave my girls, you know, alone. But my girls were very well adjusted to the business.
They did because they grew up in it.
Oh, yeah. You know, so when I left on a trip, I mean, all they cared about was, can I have some money and I'll see you whenever you get back.
Yeah.
You know, but they were good kids. You know, they knew what I needed to be done and mm-hmm. they knew to stay out of trouble. And, you know, not that they always did, but I mean, as far as grades and not getting in trouble at school, I was really blessed.
Did you get the gig? I mean, we talked a bit before about how you were on the show with, you know, Eddie and the Mysterio thing. But then when Eddie passed away, did Vince approach you to give you a job to help? Or how did that come about?
Well, I actually didn't need any help. You know, thank God we had life insurance.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we were okay. You know, I knew that I wanted to go back to El Paso because we were living in Phoenix.
Yeah.
We only were in Phoenix for 2 weeks.
I remember
we were still in boxes. Yeah. You know, so it was an eye awakening. You know, you had this whole plan ahead of you, and I think you guys were getting ready to go to an overseas
Europe,
tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so as far as like, you know, I kind of disappeared for a year after Eddie passed away. You know, I was just taking care of the girls and adjusting to our new life
mm-hmm.
and moving to El Paso. That was my goal because all my family was there. And we moved to Phoenix to be with Eddie's mom.
Mm.
So to be able to do that, you know, when Eddie passed away, it was really important that I needed to get to my dad and where my family was,
yeah.
you know, to have the support. And but, you know, Johnny didn't approach me until maybe July of the following year, so that was 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, you know, Ray's doing some stuff, you know, you want to come in and we can, you know, play around with it and see how it is. I'm like, yeah, Johnny, but just, you know, maybe once or twice and then we're good, you know. And he's like, awesome, you know, that's great. And then 10 years later, I'm still there. So it worked out really well, but I sucked. I mean, I sucked so bad out there.
How did you start? Like, what was your role when you first started?
I think it was just, Chris Benoit was still on the show and Ray Mysterio, and they were doing a storyline, but it was more towards Ray, you know.
So you were coming on like as a representative of Eddie or something?
Yeah, okay. It was kind of like, you know, here's Eddie's wife, you know, mm-hmm. and here she's going to, you know, we want to play tribute to Eddie, you know, and remember him. And, you know, but remember Ray, you know, you screwed Eddie over, you know, type thing. And I remember they gave me a promo, and oh my gosh, Chris, I remember this day. So they gave me a promo, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I went out there, and I must have looked like a deer in headlights. And all I remember is I got through it, uh-huh. came back, and Dusty Rhodes put his arm around me in Gorilla and say, come here, honey, we got to talk. I go, was it bad? He goes, oh, you sucked. But, you know, I had a lot
We have a tradition here where I have anybody, because there's a lot of guys that have Dusty Rhodes experiences. You have to try and do a Dusty Rhodes imitation. So tell me what he said in your best Dusty Rhodes imitation.
Oh, my gosh. Honey, you just suck so bad. But I still love you.
So Dusty took you aside, and what did he try and tell you?
He just told me that, you know, he just gave me some pointers. He goes, be you.
Uh-huh.
Don't be someone, you know, that you're not. And it took a while. You know, it takes a while to learn to be out there and, you know,
sure it does.
Be confident.
Get the confidence in what your character
yeah.
is.
Yeah, you know, but I still had Chavito there by my side. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I wasn't alone. Ray was good. I had a lot of people that kind of, you know, helped me. And
everybody was here for you. See, Eddie
yeah.
was such a popular guy that when you came in, everybody wanted to help you do
yeah.
good.
Yeah,
whatever it was.
They were really good to, you know, receive me. But, you know, it wasn't permanent then, you know, mm-hmm. and I don't think I got a contract until September, maybe.
But so they have you on the show to kind of, you know, be a representative of Eddie for
yeah.
Ray. And then what happens when that angle's over? Like, why are they still keeping you around?
Gosh, you know, I think from there I went right to, I went to start working with Edge. Like, it just things started progressing. It was Edge because that's when me and Ed were kind of like hating each other. And then we did a spoof where Vince said, hey, tonight you guys are going to make out, and we're going to show this alliance of you two, you know, actually being behind the scenes of.
So you turned heel?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I did. And so I loved being the bad guy more than the good guy, because I, honestly, you know, being a face was just like so hard to keep the crowd happy. But being a bad guy, I was like, oh, yeah, I like this a lot more.
And you were amazing.
Oh,
like that's one thing. You know, the thing about Vince, and when we know how smart Vince is, he must have seen something in you at some point where he was thinking, okay, she can be a heel.
I don't know what he was seeing.
Right, you know?
I had to believe in him, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and but to memorize promos was something that wasn't hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get nervous out there. I was nervous to do good for the guy I was working with. Mm-hmm. That was my objective, mm-hmm. you know, to be on time, to, you know, do my spots where I had to. And if I did that well, then I went home happy.
You okay.
know? So
yeah.
that was where my perception was. And then, you know, when I could start learning how to manipulate the crowd where they hated me, I loved it.
I mean, you are talking nuclear heat. Like, we still, it's like Vicky Guerrero heat. Like, you had more heat than a lot of the heels. Like, when I was a big heel in 2008, it's like, I finally have as much heat as Vicky. She's the top heel in the damn place. But the point being is, like, you are so good at getting under people's skins. People just, and then it became the thing to do. Like, you know, people say yes or what. The thing to do when you came out was just yell so you couldn't even hear you talk.
I know. I remember sometimes the truck would tell me, we had to turn down your mic because you're so damn loud. But, you know, that was, you know, you start to enjoy it. You start getting your, within, you know, confidence, and you start getting comfortable.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, when I worked with Edge, he showed me so much.
Okay.
I mean, he was just such an angel to me, you know, like, don't stand here, you know, I need you right here. Like, he told me exactly where I needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon you start working so much together, I already knew where I had to be, you know, for whatever he needed, you know.
Sure.
But
it becomes instinct.
Yeah, you know. And then you start getting used to the ring and where my, you know, my surroundings, and I wasn't scared anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I had to do all this, you know, funny stuff, you know, like the food fights or, you know, the backstage vignettes, I loved it.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever it is I could do, I wanted to do it well for whoever I was working with.
Gotcha. Yeah. How did you come up with the, I mean, it's probably pretty obvious, but excuse me was your big catchphrase.
Well, speaking of like thinking I knew how to do a promo, right? I had this huge promo that they changed like 30 minutes before I went out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's never happened to me before. You know, you get like a promo like 4 or 5 o'clock. You think, great, I have like,
yes,
you know, 3 hours to memorize it. Well, they came and said, hey, we have some changes. And I'm like, well, it can't be that bad. And I was in the wheelchair.
Right. And why were you in a wheelchair again?
For numerous reasons. I mean, I think I hurt my thumb one night, yeah, and I was in a wheelchair.
Right.
But I forgot my lines. I was on stage, and I just went blank. And the crowd just could feel. They knew.
They knew that you had forgotten.
They knew. They weren't dumb at all.
Yeah.
And they just, you could see people in the front row like throwing fingers, like, "You suck, Vicky, you suck." And so I just had to regroup and just kind of like, you know, just kind of think about where I was. And I just said, "Y'all, just excuse me." And they just like, just, you know, weird back at me, and I didn't think anything of it. I finished the promo, and then the next night, I think it was a SmackDown, the writer said, hey, let's try that excuse me again. And sure enough, it was like my ritual every time I went out there.
That became the thing.
Yeah. And it's so funny because even now, like, I'll go somewhere and they'll be like, excuse me. And I'm like, oh, God, sure. They're following me.
I sure hear that all the time, right?
Yeah.
Do you get recognized a lot?
Here in Houston, I do.
Yeah.
It's
a big wrestling town, right?
It is. And it's really incredible, you know, and they're really nice. You know, mm-hmm. they're like, gosh, you know, we miss you on the show. And I'm like, mm-hmm. thank you, you know, but like, it's really good to see you doing something else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Houston's a big wrestling town.
Oh, it is.
And
it,
I remember since we've been here forever, you know, just the good, you know, houses that we had, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's pretty interesting. Even some people from my work are coming tonight.
Oh, cool.
You know, so I'm like, enjoy.
I've seen enough wrestling. So it's And part of the thing too, when you were because you were the hated heel, the general manager, all the different things you're doing, people would always make cracks about, like, you know, your weight and that sort of thing. How was that? Like, you know, as a woman, as a person, you're playing a character. Was it, did it ever bother you, or are you just like, I'm just my character?
Well, of course it bothered me. You know, I mean, you're a woman that, you know, you know, I worked with girls that were just gorgeous. You know, I mean, they had these bodies that were just like a 10, you know, and when I came in, I was working with like Tori Wilson, and Stacey was here, and Mickey James, and Michelle. So, and Charmel, you know, like, and, you know, Charmel's the one that just said, girl, you are who you are.
Right.
You know, and it's not going to be how you look. It's going to make you your talent. It's what you do out there.
But you weren't a diva. You came in here to be a character. Like, you.
Yeah. That's, like, I was a superstar.
Well, yeah.
I was very labeled as a superstar. I was not in the diva section at all.
But that's because you had this amazing character, you know? But I was just wondering, like, playing this character, because I remember, like, you know, when I was a heel and people would chant, you know, asshole at me or something like that. It's like, you know,
I loved your heat. I was just like, I want
Chrissy. I want Chrissy. But, you know, I know that I'm not an asshole, but when people chant that at me, it's like, it's almost, okay, it's working. It's a badge of honor. And a lot of people from the outside world would look at that and go, how can you stand there and let people yell at you like that? It's like, well, you don't understand. When you're in this business as a heel, you want that sort of heat.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, Johnny was, you know, he was talent relations whenever I just started, I guess, like the first 6 years. So he, you know, was pretty much, you know, I'd go in there, I'm like, gosh, I don't think I'm going to do this well. And he's like, you're doing good, kid. Just keep on. Yeah. He goes, they're pissed off at you. You're doing good.
Yeah.
And pretty soon you start appreciating that it's not, you can't take it personally. It's, it's a compliment because you are getting under their skin.
Because you're playing a great part.
Yeah. You know, and even like in public, they're like, you're such a bitch. And I'm just like, well, if you got paid to be one, you'd be good too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was just to laugh when people would come up to me and talk, like, you know, we thought you were going to be a real jerk. And I'm like, you know, when Anthony Hopkins walks down the street, he's not wearing a straitjacket and eating people's liver with a fine Chianti. He's not really Hannibal Lecter. It's just a part he plays in a movie, you know?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I'm here with Vicky Guerrero. We've been talking about your time in the WWE. What were your interactions like with Vince? Did he help you out quite a bit, or did he leave you to your own devices?
Vince was very good. You know, he's always been like a dad to us, to me and Eddie. You know, him and Eddie had a very special relationship. Yeah. And, you know, when Eddie was jumping with the Radicals to come over to, you know, to Raw, you know, they were talking for, you know, a while.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean when they were coming over from WCW to WWE?
You know, so, you know, they were already talking, and, you know, Eddie would go and, you know, visit with him, and they had these meetings, and I didn't know what it was all about.
Right.
You know, because even Eddie kept it quiet, you know, because it was such a big jump, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, Vince has just been so loving to me, and he's been such a wonderful person. Even Linda and Stephanie, they were just a big instrument in making sure that, you know, I was going to always be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and I always knew when Vince wanted me to do something, because he never came to talk to me unless there was something I had to do in the ring. Like it was something like...
Like when, a match or something? Or,
yeah, like when Rey Mysterio gave me the
619?
619 in the wheelchair. Or or when Undertaker was going to tombstone me, he'd be like, Vicky, how's it going? And I'm like, oh, God, something's going to happen tonight.
The equivalent for me is, hey, pal. Oh, no.
He goes, can I speak to you for a moment? I'm like, sure. Go in the ring, and he's going to lead it all out for me. But, yeah, he was really good, and he's always been good with the girls.
Good,
you know, and so that's always been that family, you know, relationship. Mm-hmm. And he even told me, I spoke to him like a year before I left. You know, I had this plan that I always wanted to give him the respect to know that my heart was, you know, it was time to go. Mm-hmm. You know, and I wanted to finish school, and I wanted to, you know, be in the medical field. That's always been my dream, and I never could do that because I was taking care of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he just told me, he goes, I am so proud of you to be able to leave and be happy leaving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes, if you're happy, I'm going to be happy.
That's cool.
Just with that, I didn't care what anyone else was saying, that I knew that I was going to be okay, because he did deserve that respect. You know,
absolutely. That's good that you told him that. You know, I'm sure he was sad at first because he's losing a hell of a talent. But like you said, he's happy because, like I mentioned earlier, not a lot of people walk out of the business on their own terms.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't happen too often.
And it was pretty scary. You know, I mean, it's a big jump. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you're thinking, you know, you get this, you know, this paycheck that's, you know, stability every week. And
it's good money.
And there's fame and there's, you know, the travel and there's the shows, you know, but then after a while, you know, that's not who I am,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I wanted to challenge myself and finish school and,
right.
you know, and to be in a job that I was going to use my brains, mm-hmm. you know, and be worth something and be an instrument to other people.
Yeah.
And I work with patients now, and it's just so compassionate. And I feel I'm really in a good place in my life.
With a great legacy behind you in this crazy job, you know. And you mentioned, you know, getting tombstoned by Undertaker, and I actually remember that now.
That was in Tampa.
In Tampa. So did you do a lot of actual matches? Or I mean, there's some physicality you mentioned, but did you have matches?
I did, but they were like matches where I cheated half the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I did do a lot of matches with AJ mm-hmm. and with Kaylin, and then it was Edge. And Alicia Fox was on the other side of it, and Caitlin.
Did somebody splash you on your head once or something like that? I seem to remember somebody did a splash and kind of landed right here.
It was Ray. Ray did a frog splash, and I mean, if anything could have been done, they thought of it. I mean,
yeah, right.
I could just imagine what those production meetings are like. What can we do with Vicky tonight?
So, and obviously we talked. You came into it. You were doing just the character. So when you found out that you had to actually take some bumps and do some physicality, how did you prepare for that? Because you're not a trained wrestler.
No, I'm not. I asked for the crash mat. I mean, that was the first thing. But, you know, I had Chavito. I had, you know, Ray was always there. And Ray was just a nervous wreck, you know. And then, you know, Taker, you know, walked me through everything.
Yeah.
You know, so these guys were just really good guys that took care of me and talked to me and assured me. You know, and I always asked questions. You know, I wasn't going to pretend that I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
Because I didn't. You know, I'm like, okay, you want me to do this? I need to know step by step, and what is it that I need to do, and when to be there. And Vince was just such, he was always hands-on, you know, and he made sure that I was comfortable. And, you know, and the guys I worked with, and, you know, I remember Teddy Long would just, like, laugh at me on the side. He'd be like, oh, shit, here it goes. You know, but I do have to give a lot of the credit to the guys around me, because they, and they made me feel secure, and they always egged me on, like, come on, girl, you can do this. Are you kidding me? But, you know, your adrenaline gets going on the show, and you get excited, and you're just like, here we go.
Did you ever do anything where you did like feel like a stiff shot or something where you kind of landed wrong? You're like, ooh.
They all hurt, Chris.
That's right. All of them hurt.
Yeah, the next morning, you know, I'm just like, oh, God. Yeah, I feel it. Well, I can imagine what you guys feel, but I mean.
At least we train for it, though.
Yeah.
We never train.
And I'm sure they did a little bit less capacity in it versus like a regular guy.
Did you ever think, like, when you're out there getting this amazing heat, because Eddie was a great heel. Did you ever think, like, what would Eddie be thinking right now? Or how would you feel? How did you feel?
Being in the ring, I always felt Eddie next to me.
Really?
I picture him on the laying on the ropes, the top rope, across, you know, just
across
sitting,
the crossways,
crossing, and just sitting there laughing at me, you know, and I always felt at peace in the ring, you know, because this is where Eddie, this is where his love was.
Yeah, that's where he thrived.
And if I could, you know, do a little bit of good, you know, and make the company proud to be that team member, then I knew that he was happy for me too.
Right. Let's talk about Eddie.
Where do we start?
Where do you start, right? Such a beloved guy. Like I said, like everybody talks so well about Eddie to this day.
Even, I miss him every day.
Do you?
Yeah.
I do too.
It's so weird that it seems like it hasn't been 9 years. Maybe last year that he's been gone. Like, it just seems like so long ago now.
Did you have any, like, you know, being married for so long, being together for so long, did you feel that Eddie was having issues? Like, did you know that something was up, or How was that for you in the last 2 or 3 years, physically, mentally, for Eddie?
Well, you know, as we all know, you know, Eddie went through his demons, you mm-hmm. know, of being an addict. So he was sober the last 4 years,
right.
you know, before he passed away. And you take that away, you know, he's sober, you know, that he's not, you know, on the pills or drinking, but you start seeing his injuries come out in a natural way,
mm-hmm.
you know, his pain and his, you know, hard to walk in the morning. And, you know, and then he starts seeing the doctors because his back was so messed up.
Mm.
And there's always that voice inside my head going, are you going to be okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Eddie was just such a fighter, you know, and he loved to come into work. That was like his medicine. You know, mm-hmm. he loved to perform, you know, and be there for the fans. You know, so I knew as a wife that he wasn't well,
mm.
you know, but it's incredible how, you know, he was just taken the way he was. Because he ran like 3 miles that night before
know,
he left.
Oh,
and he
really?
Went to the gym and he played with the girls. Like, he was just like just a, you know, normal
yeah.
Eddie. You know, so you never think that, you know, he's really hurting. But there was times where he would just, you know, his elbow would be swollen or his knee would be so messed up. And, you know, but he would just get up and keep going.
He was like very obsessed. What's the word I'm looking for? Like, for example, I remember, because we used to ride together, all of us.
He loved you so much.
Oh, man. We had a lot of fun. I remember the one time we used to room together, too. And he was like, hey, do you mind if I leave the TV on?
Oh, and God, I'm like, I hated that.
And I was like, well, no, can you shut it off? He's like, what are you talking about? I said, well, you asked me, like, do you mind if I leave the TV on? Because if it's a problem, we'll turn it off. We'll turn it off. Well, it's my room, too. Well, I don't want the TV on. Well, I want it on. Well, then why'd you ask me that? Why'd you ask me? Fight. Well, fuck you. And then just kind of sit there for a bit. And then eventually turn the TV off. But that's when it's like your road family, you know?
Yeah. I mean, y'all saw him more than I did.
Yeah.
You know, and you guys get to know him better than I did.
Yeah. But I remember when he really got lean in about 98 WCW, 1998. Yeah. He would eat zero carbs. Zero. He would do the treadmill or whatever the brand of cardio for, you know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, then go wrestle a 30-minute match and eat nothing but salads. And he would, you know how he would get? He would get like so hunched over and just be like walking super slow. And I was like, dude, you got to eat something. He's like, oh, I'm going to have another salad. It doesn't count. You can't do that. Like,
he was a little OCD.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. I mean, it drove me nuts because I couldn't have like a piece of cheesecake or anything in front of me. Well, do you love me? Like, if you love me, you wait till I'm not here to eat that. And I'm like, I want it now. And he'd be like, well, fine, go ahead and eat it. And I'd be like, well, fine, I won't eat it. And he'd, all right, well, I'll just take a little bite. And I'm like, oh, so you want some now? But yeah, he was very disciplined.
Yes,
You know, but he just took it. I always felt that he took it to an extreme, even in his performance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would think he had the most horrible match. And
very self-critical.
Oh, my gosh. And then I look at it, and I'm like, this was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the people were, like, on their feet watching these matches. And I'm like, how could you think that this is a bad match? You know, he was so hard on himself.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was sad to see sometimes because he was just incredible.
He had, like, a lot of times the weight of the world. I found there was two Eddies, and I'm sure you probably,
you probably had
10 Eddies. But the one I would see would be a real goofy, funny guy. And then the other side would be, like, a real intense, you know, constant, like you said, like, so super self-critical to where if there was, you know, when he was the champion, what's the house tonight? Oh, it's, you know, 100 grand. What was it last time? 102 grand. He would take great...
you took the
responsibility that the house had gone down 2000
and he would think it was his fault.
It was his fault, yeah. You know, I'm working on top, and it's like, it's not how it works. For him, that's how it worked.
Yeah.
You know, was he like that with a lot of different things?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and there was many sides to Eddie. I mean, he was sentimental. You know, he was very, you know, took things to, you know, he would, you know, see a person that was, you know, homeless, and he would just want to take him and take care of him.
Yeah.
You know, and there, of course, there's a funny guy, and then there was the work Eddie. You know, and then there was the dad, who was just like this amazing man.
Tell us about Eddie as a dad.
He was a kid. I mean, it wasn't just to go get Shaw, you know, some crayons for a school project. They went and came back with 10 toys, you know, and forget the project.
Yeah.
You know, you can take care of the project when I leave, but we're going to go have fun right now.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, this is not parenting, Eddie. Like, this is not what we signed up for. But he just wanted to spoil the girls whenever, you know, he came home. And, It was something that the girls played that game. You know, they knew that when dad came home, it was fun time.
Yeah.
Because mom is the soldier that, you know, keeps everything in order with all the schedules and,
yeah.
you know, punctual. And Eddie was never punctual.
He's Mexican.
Yeah. I mean, if I depended on him to take the girls to school, I just call the teacher. They're going to be late.
Yeah.
Just let you know. But then I got smart and started telling Eddie if the girls had to be at school at 4 in the afternoon, I'd tell him at 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes, babe, I'm sorry. I got them there at 4. We're good. It's okay. You're not mad? No, babe, we're good.
He never
smart.
Figured that out, right?
I yeah. got smart to it. But he was a great dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always sad for the girls not to be able to share him now, mm-hmm. you know, because I think these are the such more important years because mm-hmm. they're out in the world and they're growing up. And
they're young adults now, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and Shaw's like, gosh, I don't know how dad would take with me getting married. And I'm like, maybe it's a good thing that he's not around.
Getting married to a wrestler.
I know. Right? I would love to see that conversation go down.
How do you think he would have felt when Shaw was trying to get into the business?
I think he would have had a lot of reservations.
Yeah, okay.
Because he never wanted, you know, because Shaw and Sherilyn loved when they were in the ring, mm. you know, performing with Eddie and being out there. I mean, they would come home going, oh, I got to call my friends, you know, I'm going to be a superstar and, you know, I'm yeah. on TV. And he's like, don't think about it. He goes, it's school. You have to go to school first mm-hmm. and then we'll think about this in 20 years. So
yeah.
I'm sure that with Shaw, it would have been really hard. But then at the same time, he would have been a great, you know, teacher for her too, to show her the psychology. And,
like once and he got over
her.
It, if he really knew she wanted to do it, he'd say, okay, yeah. here we go. You want to learn it? This is what we're going
to
do.
And I think it would have been great, you know, cause she would have just, you know, to have a teacher like Eddie would have been so priceless.
Oh yeah.
You know, but Shaw's just like Eddie. So I think they would have butted heads a lot,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause they're exactly alike.
So stubborn.
Oh, that's not even a word. But I think it would have been interesting to sit back and see how that would have.
You know, you mentioned, you know, Eddie, and he was a very influential guy in this locker room. I mean, actually, something to this day that I remember every day when I go out for dinner, which in this job is 3 times a day, is always tip 20%. Because
yeah.
I remember we went somewhere. Where whatever the tip was, it was 10 bucks. I gave like, you know, $2. He's like, what are you giving $2 for? Or $1 or what? He's like, give him $2, give him $3, give him $4. He goes, what's $4 to you? I said, nothing. He goes, to them, it could mean like making their rent or whatever. This is what they do. So I always over tip. And that's specifically because of Eddie.
And that's the compassionate Eddie.
Yeah.
I mean, he always took care of anyone that was in front of him.
Yeah. You know, and also too, he was a guy, and especially in this company, in this job, you know, that, you know, not so much religion, but God and Christianity, it's not something that's widely talked about,
right,
or accepted within the locker room. But Eddie was a guy that people would go to him to ask questions about God and about the Bible. Now, he never pushed it in anybody's face, mm-hmm. but he'd sit, like, especially the last couple of years, he'd always sit and read his Bible and go through the Bible. And I remember guys like Big Show. We'd go ask Eddie a question about this or that. He became like kind of the wise, like spiritual guy.
Yeah, like clergyman.
Yeah, yeah. That people would go talk to if they're having issues and knew that Eddie could give them, maybe not the answer, but give them some advice on something he'd been reading.
Right, or his testimony.
Yeah.
Yeah, his faith was very important to him. Eddie taught me when we were getting married, you know, to start going to church,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he showed me Christ. I mean, I didn't know Christ before him,
mm.
you know, so Eddie was a very big influence on me, you know, as far as like finding my faith and believing in God for everything I do, mm-hmm. you know, is for the good of God.
Yeah.
You know, so Eddie was just, well, you know, you had his Bible for a while.
I did, yeah.
You know, and that was
He had so many notes written, and that's what I read is his notes and his thoughts.
The underlining.
Yes, underlining. It was real heavy stuff, especially to read that after he'd passed away.
Oh, my God!
And it took me a while, because you gave it to me. It took me about a year to be able to read it, yeah. for whatever that is, you know?
Yeah. You know, I still can't read his book that he wrote.
Oh, his WWE book?
Yeah. You know, and I was there when he was writing it. But, you know, mm. you enjoy it because he was there.
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah, tell about that story, you
yeah,
know, or
yeah,
talk
yeah.
about this. You know, but I still can't read through the whole book.
Mm.
And I still have it, you know, in my office.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just too, maybe it hurts because mm-hmm. he's not here.
It's, you know, it's
so
too,
it's
yeah.
a hard reminder.
It's too close, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he, another thing too, especially in this company, because Eddie was not a tall stature wise, and you know the WWE is a big man company. But he came in here as one of the radicals, and I think when they came in, probably maybe Chris was the one that they were looking to be the guy. But it wasn't long before Eddie became the guy. And I remember Brian Gewirtz told me, like, Eddie's the guy that everyone likes because he's got the character and the personality. Like, right off the bat, he embraced that Latino Heat character.
Yeah.
He had that confidence right away. And he'd never shown that sort of personality before.
That's true. You know, and the vignettes that he thought of, you know, like, you know, they did the stuff with Chavito, you know, with the lowrider, and, you know, with picking up the girls, you know, from the house. And yeah. the tennis guys are there in their little outfits. That's Eddie yeah. in real life. You know,
right.
like he would find a joke in anywhere he went, like, you know, make a joke about someone. I'm like, what do you think of that at? But, you know, that's just like, that's just being the Mexican guy.
Yeah.
It's always causing trouble.
Yeah.
So he loved doing that in the ring. That was just like second nature for him.
And then he was able to build up to winning the world title from Brock Lesnar in San Francisco, which is one of the best matches of all time and one of the greatest reactions of all time. Were you there that night?
No, I had the girls had school, and they couldn't miss, which, you know, I
yes.
mean, it's hard, you know, because, you know, I had to be home, you
yeah.
know, and but to watch it, you know, his mom.
Did he
was
tell there. You? Did you know what was going on?
I had a hunch.
Yeah.
You know, because you know how things kind of, you know, how mm-hmm. he talks, but I didn't know the outcome so much. Of course, during the match, you kind of question yourself, like, well, maybe, you know, maybe he's not going to get it,
yeah.
you know, but to see that, you know, he didn't talk to me like probably for 2 days before that match. He was just so focused and
so
just didn't
it.
Want, direct, you know, distractions. He'd call me and say, kid's good, the kid's good, you know, you good, you know, everything's okay, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm just, you know, just kind of being myself. I'm like, all right, do what you got to do.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that was quite a night for him. And I'm sad I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But his mom was there, and Mondo was there too.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, I was glad he had his family.
How did he talk about that afterwards? It would seem to me that Eddie would probably come home and it was just another day at work. Or did he ever allow you, like, we did it, babe, or anything like that?
He called me afterwards, you know, which was nice.
Yeah.
You know, and they filmed it, you know.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't know they were filming him, uh-huh. you know. So I was like, "Babe, I can't wait to just, you know, grab you." And he's like, "Oh, were they filming us right now?" I don't care. But yeah, it was a happy house that night.
Yeah,
and the kids, I let them stay up and watch it, and we were cheering him on. But you know, he was the underdog. You know, so he
absolutely
a lot of people didn't thought it was kind of a joke.
It was even oh really that he yeah. won?
Yeah, because you know, here's Brock Lesnar.
Yeah,
you know, here's this, you know, huge guy. You know, and even Eddie was kind of, you know. You know, just wondering, well, I don't know what they're going to do with this, you know, but
Eddie worked a lot bigger. You know, he was 5'8" or whatever, but worked like he was 6'8". Like he
yeah.
worked hard and you had to keep up with him. So it was believable.
That's
you know?
True. Yeah. He had a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
And he liked the challenge.
Yeah.
I think he did. He liked to be the, you know, the pollito legs, you know, the chicken legs that walk in with this big guy that's like huge, you know, and, you know, so he liked to prove everyone wrong that he could make a difference.
That's what Hattori, the Japanese referee, called him. He calls him Mexican flamingo.
Yeah.
Is that what he called him? Big upper body flamingo legs. Skinny leg.
And he was the, you know, this is going to be kind of funny, but, you know, he always prided himself on the cricket sounds in the
cricket.
Guy's locker room.
The famous cricket. So
yeah.
When were you introduced to the cricket, the actual cricket sounds?
It was probably when we started dating. It was so funny because Eddie used to collect Sikorsky crystal for me.
Uh-huh.
And he got me a cricket for my collection. He goes, now you're going to always be reminded of me. And I'm like, thanks, babe.
Yeah, Eddie would take his appendage in the lower abdominal area and slap it against his thigh, which would make a sound like, and that was the cricket. I forgot about
so
that.
Proud of that.
He loved the cricket.
Yeah. So every time I have my collection, every time I see it, I laugh, you know, because that was his pride and joy was the cricket sound.
Oh, and see, and that's the funny thing. Like when we came up together in ECW and then into WCW, it was kind of like the four guys.
Yeah.
They
well,
called us the
clique.
New Japan Four. Yeah, our little clique was me and Chris and Eddie and Dean. And because we came through the business together and then traveled together, and then Chavo came in with us, Chavito came in with us.
That was so long ago.
I know, so long ago.
We're old.
We've just been doing this for a long time, long time. And talking about this, I mean, Chris and Eddie were very close. very, very, very close to the point where, like, whenever we traveled, Chris and Eddie would be, like, looking at snacks in a gas station to see what the trans fat was and what the sugar was. And me and Dean would just buy it. And one time we were, like, we tried to look at it, and we looked at each other and started laughing. Like, what are we doing? So they would be the guys that would get up at 7 and go to the gym and have breakfast and then have nothing to do from 9 until 4, where me and Dean would be like, let's just sleep until noon. And so there was two shifts going on. But Chris and Eddie were the team. And
they're damn egg whites and
egg whites and no butter. And we always laugh because Eddie would say chicken breast and he would always motion like, can I get a chicken breast and make a shape of a chicken breast with his hands? Like, you have to explain. Can I get a chicken breast, please, with no oil and no grease?
No skin.
Yeah, like no nothing. And then, you know, WrestleMania, I think it was 20 or something, where Chris and Eddie are in the ring together. They're the two champions. It was such poetic justice. How hard did it hit Chris when Eddie passed away?
It was very hard because, you know, me and Nancy were really good friends.
Yeah, that's right, too.
So we talked quite a bit on the phone. And when, you know, Nancy stayed with me probably 2 weeks after Eddie passed away. And then Chris would come, y'all were on the road.
Yeah, he had to go
to
Europe,
right. So he would come and see her and then go back again, and she stayed with me. So through her, you know, I know that he just lost, like, his brother.
Yeah.
You know, it affected him a lot to the point where, you know, you start questioning, you know, is he okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she saw, you know, a lot of emotional changes going on with him. And, you know, they were like glue.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and Chris, you know, I remember, you know, when he went into, you know, our house, you know, in Phoenix, you know, with the funeral. And he couldn't even, I mean, he went into our bed and just cried.
Yeah.
You know, like a little kid. And that's when I knew, I was like, this is going to be hard.
When I saw him at Eddie's funeral, he came and gave me a hug that I've never felt in my life, where it almost hurt me. It was like the hardest hug I've ever felt. Like, almost like, ah,
yeah.
And uncontrollable crying. But he kept saying that, like, he was a pallbearer, but I was not. Like, and he was so angry that I wasn't asked to be a pallbearer for some reason. And he gave me a rose that I guess the pallbearers put roses in the on top of the casket, and he said, "You need this rose." Like, he just had to give me this rose. But I felt that Chris was never the same after Eddie passed away.
No, he wasn't.
You know, because he had lost Johnny Grunge, he lost Ray Traylor, he lost Black Cat, who we all love. Black
that
Cat
was a hard one.
And then Eddie was the one. So, you know, for I have to believe that that was one of the catalysts that unraveled him.
Right, because I know, you know, they fought a lot. You know, Nancy would call me and, you know, they would be fighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, I think, you know, that's marriage, you know.
Sure.
You know, you're going to be okay, you know, but when things ended up the way they did, I just kind of went, oh my gosh, you know, mm-hmm. I wonder if that was just like the catalyst that, you know, that just was, he couldn't do it anymore. The straw that broke the camel's back.
Right.
You know, but she, you know, he was isolating himself a lot and, you know, and that's hard. You know, it's hard to see that because I worked with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to hear her conversations and then to see him at work, I was like the middleman. You know, I wanted to reach out and just tell him, you know,
yeah,
talk to me, you
right.
know, and he'd be so quiet,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just
because he always was quiet, but then he just became very quiet.
Yeah, and Nancy was like, you know, the wild one, you know, mm-hmm. and laughing and screaming, you know, and holding the conversations, you know, so. I wonder if that's, you know, just, you know, because of Eddie, you know, passing away, if that was just where Chris didn't want to be here anymore either.
Well, they also, too, like over the last 7 or 8 years, have really done a lot of concussion research mm-hmm. where it gives you those, you know, Chris Nowinski actually has created the Sports mm-hmm. Legacy Institute, and I had him on this show to talk about that, how it affects, you get dementia, you start losing your mind. I'm wondering if he had a really bad concussion that caused him to start seeing things or hearing things. You know, we'll never know.
Right.
Bottom line is we lose another couple of great friends, you know. And, right. and you were still friends with Nancy?
Yes.
Right towards...
I talked to her that week.
Wow.
That she passed away.
Unbelievable.
And Chavita was there too, the same week.
Yeah.
You know, so we always kept in touch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and... But it's sad, you know, because, you know, and you talk about concussions, you know, I saw Eddie have headaches all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you're living these injuries with, you know, with your husbands, mm-hmm. you know, and you see how they hurt and, you know, you see the effects after, you know, all these chair shots and stuff, and you're thinking, yeah, that's a great possibility of, you know, what could happen, you know, to Chris. You know, if Eddie was going through it, why would not he be going through it too? Mm-hmm. You know, and they took a lot of chairs. You guys,
we did.
We used chair shots all year.
We
long.
Used to just take them with our heads.
Yeah,
just take it. Like, just be tough. Like, how stupid is that? But that's just how it was. That's how we did it.
That's, you guys gave 100%.
Yeah, that's
and
how we came up.
It was nothing less. It, you know, was expected from y'all, and you guys put all your heart into it.
Yeah.
You know, so for Eddie to, you know, want to do that, as a wife, you just pray for them and just say, okay, babe, go have a good match and be careful.
Yeah.
You know, that's all you can do, because this business was their heart.
Yeah. It's all that any of us really knew how to do, because we started at such a young age.
Yeah.
And came through the system by having to go overseas and being smaller guys too. That's why we always got along, because all four of us were never supposed to make it. You know?
Yeah, yeah, we're like this clique that, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember seeing you guys grow, you know, as the, like, the four amigos, you know.
Yeah.
Just kind of went from Mexico and then, you know, to WCW and ECW, and now, yeah, you know, to WCW.
Japan. Yeah,
in Japan.
I called Eddie and I was the greatest tag team that never was. Because they stuck us together for about 6 weeks.
And that was it.
And that was it. We were A and Way.
Yeah. You know, and Eddie always talked about, you know, they wondered why, you know, you guys didn't, you know, get to do more.
Yeah.
But it's...
We had similar personalities, similar work styles. And it's funny, when Eddie came here, because he called me a lot before he made the jump to the WWE. Because I was... The show was first, but I was second. I was the first of our guys to go. And... he was a little worried, but he knew he had to go. And he was like, I'm going whether Chris and Dean decide to go or not. I mean, I'm sure you probably knew that.
Yeah.
You know, but...
It was either fight or flight. You know, I mean, it's either, you know, I told him, you don't take this chance, you'll never know how it's going to be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's scary.
Especially for you as a mom with two kids, you know. Yeah.
Should I be pulling out our savings right now?
But when he came here, we only worked very briefly. Very, very briefly. So I never, hardly ever worked with Eddie in WWE, which is kind of a drag, because, you know, I wish I would have.
But you did your own great thing, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, you know, Eddie was just such a big fan. Like, I'm so proud. I mean, he was just so proud of everyone that was just, you know, doing, you know, their own thing and making it on their own. Like, it was a good place, you know, for him to see everyone be okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
What do you miss most about Eddie?
His laugh.
Mm. Yeah. I can still remember that too.
It's, you know, pranks.
Yeah.
You know, being stupid, you know, around me.
Yeah. I'll never forget. This is such a dumb thing. I'll share it with you. We were driving in a car, and he always got mad at me because I never rented the right car. It was too small or too short or whatever. And one day we were driving, and we just had some kind of stupid fight, and he had a water bottle, like, and he had unscrewed the cap, and then he put it on like a monocle and just looked at me like this. Like, just, I'm looking at Vicky right now with this water bottle cap, and it's like, he just stared at me, and like, I don't know why we started laughing, but it was just like, we're so bored and so tired and so sick of each other. I'm just going to make a plastic monocle and look at you. And it's like, you know, it's like, I always remember that for some reason.
Yeah.
Why you think of those things, but.
I know, yeah. What, many long nights together.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. All of us did. What's your, the biggest thing you miss about being in the WWE?
Let's see. I probably miss performing inside the ring.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a high that no one can take away from you.
Yeah.
You know, from aside from all the BS backstage and who's doing what, you know, to who or what's going on, when I hit inside that ring, like, nothing else mattered.
Yeah.
You know, it was my promo. It was my, you know, 3 minutes to do what I had to do for that whole day I waited to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the greatest thing I could feel. You know, and I probably miss driving with Sorona, because she was my bud. You know, we traveled for...
Sorona's Tamina?
Yeah, Tamina.
Sorry.
And so, like, for a year and a half, we became really good friends. And I still talk to her. Like, every Sunday we talk.
Oh, cool.
You know, that's like our, you know, our thing. But I miss her a lot, you know, and I'm inside the ring.
Yeah.
You know? And then, of course, catering, you see everybody, and you be stupid. And
yeah.
I was always, like, the funny one. I just say stupid jokes or, you know, make people laugh. And
yeah.
You
always have
a
good
family.
Disposition, always happy, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, all the stuff that I've gone through in my life, you know, it's what you make out of it that's going to count. You know, you can have a good day or a bad day. And, of course, you know, by traveling and, you know, your flight cancels and you still got to end up driving, you know, the 6 hours to get to the show, I'm alive,
yeah.
And I was healthy, and I was able to afford to get a car, and I was able to get food on the way, and
yeah.
And I made it safe.
Right.
Thank you, God, because I have a job to go to.
Yeah.
And with that, you know, what could be bad about that?
I remember the last time I ever saw Eddie was when we were, Jessica and I, and you and Eddie were flying to Washington, D.C. for a pay-per-view. I remember the flight got canceled.
Yes.
So we were just going to stay at the
Tampa,
and we just stayed at the Marriott Hotel, and you guys were going to drive home. We were just like, just stay at the Marriott Hotel and just fly out in the morning. And I just remember we hung out, and then Eddie was reading me Bible quotes from the chair, and that's actually the last time I ever saw him. It was with you.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I love Facebook because, you know, Jessica, she's such a great inspiration. Like, you know, I see her with the kids, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I remember those days.
Yeah.
You know, but it's good because you can still connect with people.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, because everyone's a family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even though you're working, you know, me and Jessica, you know, we're moms.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
wrestling wives.
We share the same, you know, ups and downs. And,
yeah.
You know, to be able to, you know, put stupid, you know, crap on Facebook and laugh about it, you know, those are good times.
Yes.
And, you know, and to know that even though I'm gone, that I still see
my family.
Keeps
that connection.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny is yesterday I was talking to Lana, and she was mentioning that you were coming today. She knew you were coming. I guess like you and her get along really well.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of influence with a lot of the divas, and over the years that you would give them advice or help them along or whatever it would be, like the house mother.
Some divas.
Yeah, some of them.
Lana is always impressed me.
Mm-hmm.
I love her confidence, and she's beautiful.
Yeah.
And for the role that she took with Rusev, you know, mm-hmm. She was doing practically almost what I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, the manager with the promos and
similar type of heat too.
Absolutely.
She starts talking, people are like, ooh.
Yeah, you know, and to get to know her, and you know, and to I think the first time we really got started talking was last WrestleMania, and it was, you know, we're at the party and just dancing, and you know, and we got really close, and to meet her family, you know, she inspires me, and mm-hmm. I told her, I said, it's time for you to take it now, you know, and go have fun.
Yeah.
And you know, we text every once in a while, I'll see the show, and I'll be like, great job. She goes, oh my God, you know, this and that. And I'll be like, it's another night, time to look for the next night.
Do you still watch sometimes?
I do sometimes. Mm-hmm. I have school at night, so it is hard to, you know, be able to, you know, watch the whole show. It's
right.
3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, I can't believe I did that. But, you know, because I get off work at, you know, 5 and mm-hmm. have dinner, and it's time for school. So I'm pretty devoted in my schedule. But, you know, that thank God for, like, YouTube and, you know, stuff that you can always, you know, the WWE Network.
Yeah.
You know, which is free.
Only $9.99. Free, whatever. Yeah. So last question. What is your, if you had to pick, like, your favorite moment that of something that you were involved in, or favorite angle, or favorite person to work with, could you pick one?
I think the one that always stands out is probably The Rock.
What happened?
Was when he sang to me, Biatch, you look horrible tonight. It was that song where I thought he was
going to Biatch, you look horrible tonight.
Yeah, I'm not going to sing it, but I'm sure you could YouTube it. But
I forgot that one.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, but everyone has just been so much fun to work mm-hmm. with. And, you know, Edge and, you know, Dolph was just a sweetheart. He was just like the crack up out there. Like, I could always have a laugh every night when we were out there. It could be the most serious stuff he was going through, you know, a ladder match or whatever. And he would still say, hey, do I look nice tonight? And I'm like, whatever, Dolph. You know, he's always putting himself over it, but it was a fun. It was always fun with him.
We just showed a clip. I had a highlight reel a couple months ago, and we showed the clip of you throwing Stephanie into originally what was supposed to be poop, and now has been changed to chocolatey substance or something.
A lot of people say diarrhea. I'm like, whatever you want to think of it.
Yeah. That was your big revenge and your last appearance as well, right?
You know, for Stephanie to do that for me, you know, to give me the chance to throw her in, I was honored.
Yeah.
Because you don't get that.
No.
Very often.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's the queen. Yeah,
you know, and Steffi's like, okay, well, we're going to turn around. Now you're going to push me. And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
And then, you know, when she was in a dress, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be horrible. But she was so much fun. And then she threw up on me the week before, you know, in the bathroom. And I'm just like, okay, I guess I deserve leaving. Yeah, this is going to all come
the
to
ups and downs of WWE. You just never know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, but I was honored by that. And for them to let me go out on Eddie's music, that was, I still get touched when I see that, you know, but it's been a really good ride.
It sure has. Yeah. And it's been great talking to you, Vicky.
Thank
I'm so
you,
glad.
Chris. I'm glad I got to do this.
I know. Finally, right? I know there's probably a dozen people that want to see you, so I don't want to hog you, but thank you so much.
I wish you the best, and I'm proud of you.
Thanks to my friend, such a sweet, sweet lady, Vicky Guerrero. Been through a lot in her life, but as you can hear, still humble, still God-fearing, still amazing, even post-WWE. Good luck to Vicky. We're so glad you did the show. And I'm so glad to tell you guys my new Comedy Central web series, Nothing to Report, debuts April 13th. I'm going to have the guys from that show on the podcast, the creators, Team Tiger Awesome, Nick Mundy, Clint Gage, Michael Truly. We're going to be talking all things Nothing to Report next week. Also talking about all things Fozzy. Go to FozzyRock.com. You can see all the stuff coming up. April 24th, playing 37 Main in Atlanta, John's Creek. April 25th, Fozzy in Jacksonville doing the Welcome to Rockville Festival again for the second year in a row. May 18th through the 24th with Slash, Chicago, Austin, Houston, Dallas. October 30th, the Kiss Cruise. That's Kiss Cruise with K. Fozzy invited to join the Kiss Cruise 5. We're so excited. Lots of big gigs coming up. FozzyRock.com for all ticket information and VIP information. Don't miss any of these shows. Slash and Kiss, are you kidding me? My high school Chris is flipping out. Also going to be flipping out April 19th to be doing SuperMegaFest.com in Marlborough, Massachusetts. Very excited about that. Signing on the Sunday only. Come on down and check that out. SuperMegaFest.com in Marlborough, Massachusetts, April 19th. Ah, man, tons of stuff going on. Great guests coming up next week. I'm going to tell you who some of them are. Thank you for being here with me. Thank you for listening. Thanks for checking out the sponsors like MeUndies.com, DDP Yoga, DraftKings, Advanced Auto Parts, and, of course, Amazon. You go to PodcastOne.com. You click on the Keep Our Podcast Free button at the top of the page. You click on Talk is Jericho. Use those Amazon links. You buy anything you want. And remember, you're helping out this show in the process. There's no extra fees or hidden challenges. You're just helping me out, all right? You take care of me. I take care of you. You know your boy is working hard. He's worth a deuce. That's right. On Friday, I got somebody worth a deuce. You like The Walking Dead? How about the hottest show on television? How about Josh McDermott? Yeah, Eugene. He's going to be on this show. How cool is it? Not only do I have Vicky Guerrero on a Wednesday, I got Josh McDermott from the hottest show on television, Walking Dead. I mean, come on. That is a great, great week of stuff. I gave you John Cena on Monday. I am working hard for you, man. Working hard for you. And that's all I want to do. I'm happy to be here. And we'll see you next week. In the meantime and in between time, stay cool, stay hungry, and stay, yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.